Today, I'm a little bit going to talk about. Do you hear me with the microphone? Okay, right, great. Yeah, before I talk a lot about like what I'm going to talk about, a little bit background of me. I'm originally from Germany, now living in Switzerland for a few years. So this is actually next to my home. This is how Switzerland looks like. A little bit, it's not true for all scenarios. So what's on the list for today? I want to talk just a little bit about configurations, just a very small introduction so that we're on the same level, because you may or may not have like different opinion about what configurations are and especially what configuration management is. And then I would like to talk about like configuration as a service, like in my opinion, taking it a little step further than we had DevOps so far. And I will talk a little bit about CDIST, which is like the back end for the project we have here. Right. So for me, like when you look back in computer science, like we have like configurations of systems we have quite a long time. Like you can go back like way further than like PDP-ELF or way earlier. So configurations are kind of existing like 1960. We began configuration management, and I guess I got to give this one to actually Mark. I think Mark actually started it pretty early with configuration management. I think it was 1993. And this is pretty cool. I'm not so much a fan of anyway. but he started it. For me, I had a look around a little bit. Configuration as a service is not yet a topic, I think, in the US. It's getting a topic in Switzerland. I think we're a little bit ahead of everyone else there. So that's why I'm also here today giving a little talk about it. And yeah, so I said, like, what are we talking about in general? Like, so what's the configuration? I'm taking it a little bit abstract here. It's like configuration is a set of parameters, any kind of parameters you pick with values assigned that describes what you actually want to go to. I make a difference like to other people who say like configuration may be something which describes how to go there. My opinion, this doesn't matter. Like, and this is also like things and beliefs that most people of who are actually writing configuration management systems nowadays is you define a target state, and in the target state, let's take it very concrete. It's like you have a web server with some configuration, with some vhost, with some database servers attached. You want to have it in a specific state. How you're going there, you shouldn't matter. This is really not none of your business anymore. This is like also in contrast like to the old approach where, like, I think it was mid-90s where everyone was like hacking shell scripts, and it was pretty cool time there. You know, you were like, all right, I'm going to install this, I'll do this shell script and this shell script. And my coworker actually also can use it. Oh, but he ran it twice. Okay. All right. So that's why I'm talking about target state here. Some really easy examples. Bring this up here because just to show you, like, there are different levels where you can apply configurations to. Especially like when you think about like a virtual machine, some of you may actually use like software from big vendors. Oh, and as Chris said before, I'm pretty much in the open source scene. So I'm not so much into like commercial products. I'm really everything doing here on open source stacks. So coming back, closing the parentheses, when you have a set of virtual machines, you may be using like some big vendor that is also present here. The question is then, how do you actually manage your virtual machines? How do you have an overview of which virtual machine existing with which parameters, with which values? How do you say, all right, we have 25 web servers, each assigned like 24 gigs of main memory. How do we actually bring them down to 12 gigs of main memory right now? And you shouldn't really care how it's being done. Again, it's a target state. So this is why I brought it up here. There are some interesting aspects of configuration management where you configure like one host, and like you have information that you want to carry over to another host, and you say, we do have a set of web servers, but we also want to have them configured on our backup server. So you have some dependencies cross machine-wise. And you know, you may also have some, this is actually from one of our customers. They have a set of load balancers, again, with a set of different web servers attached. And depending on which load balancer we're talking to, they have a different set of web servers, like in different locations they are using. So this is all, in my opinion, part of a configuration. We're not yet talking about configuration management. So I think, like, coming back to 1990-something, the way to go was, like, we had our sysadmin, which is the funny guy on the left-hand side, and he was, like, configuring some systems. Well, at some point, you know, we all agreed, like, maybe if there's more than one person in more than one system, which is more or less the rule I apply, it may become chaos if you are there without configuration management. So this is why, just, I guess you all know this already, I'm just bringing this up to get us all on the same level here. It's like, we do need configuration management, not just because it's hip and it's in right now, but because also it helps us. So something, the way how I define configuration management is something that you can rerun, something that is reproducible, something that has a very, very good documentation character. Because it doesn't help you if you're writing your configurations in like BrainFuck or Whitespace or any like, you can do it and you can call it configuration management, but I wouldn't agree with you because it doesn't have a documentation character anymore. Something I also put there, coming like earlier from university managing their clusters, it is nice if you have configuration management. It's even nicer if you can use it like for all of your systems. If you're not getting stuck like after 100 or 200 machines, and then it's like, oh, I need to redesign my configuration management. My point of view, this should be like in every configuration management system. Like when you want to take it serious, it scales up, hopefully more or less linearly, but it scales up in general like from design. There's nothing else to add. All right, so, right, we are here with configuration management. It's a pretty cool thing, wouldn't you agree so far? Okay. Well, I actually also do agree until we are coming to a point where you say, all right, there are developers who would actually do stuff on their own, who actually don't really care about the sysadmins and my opinion, they also don't need to. So if we just try to put the developer where like the sysadmins were, we can say, all right, yeah, this developer can easily learn configuration management system of our choice and apply all things. We can do this. We can also let the developer do some other things. It's, you know, you may now heavily disagree with me and say, oh, wow, developer on its own, like doing like configurations, like setting up systems. I think it heavily depends on which kind of environment you are in. Like Joe was talking about like staging and like master environments. And for the companies we are actually working, they are mostly like using agile methods. So given a customer comes in today, they are likely to have like a really easy prototype by the end of the week. And now if anyone is working of you like working for a bigger company, it's like end of the week prototype. Maybe we fill in a form to request a server. Maybe someone reacts until end of week. Maybe we will maybe we even have some cloud management tool installed. Maybe someone will take care of this until end of week. For me, this doesn't work. For my customers, this doesn't work because it's way too slow. If today our customer comes in, we have an interview with him or her, well, English language, maybe our developer should be ready to like hack some stuff by this evening and not next week. So this is why I suggest maybe we find something where the developer can start on its own. It doesn't need to be productive. This is, for me, this is a more political thing, whether or whether or not you allow a developer like to create a production thing. It's more about like the way how your company works. It's not about being productive. So, summarized, I suggest maybe for some use cases, we actually drop our, we drop configuration management. And because like our developer does not really need to know about configuration management, and he actually also doesn't need to know about configurations. You know, before we thought like, well, we have this great configuration management system, which is pretty cool, but still, if you use the configuration management system, you have to know what you are actually configuring. And maybe the developer doesn't need to know about your Apache, your Nginx, your Postgres, MongoDB, you name it. And so I just reason with this, given that everything I said so far is true, maybe we just agree on a developer cannot configure a system. And this brings me to what we are actually being developing and which is in an internal beta at the moment, is configuration as a service, which I will just do some basic definition here. Configuration as a service allows you to like apply configurations to your own systems, to any of your systems, with minimum knowledge of the configurations and with minimum knowledge of a configuration management system. I'm putting here minimum knowledge because if a developer goes out and says, I want a web server, it may not be enough like to be able to run an application. Your developer may actually need, all right, I want to have some stacks that's looking like an Nginx, I want a unicorn set up in between. I would like to have database connections to MongoDB. So there is some knowledge your developer needs to know, but I guess it's part of his job. But he doesn't really need to know how to apply those configurations. So, you know, we could just say, like, kind of 2012-13-ish way is like the developer goes to the sysadmins and asks them like to use the configuration management system to roll out things. But I suggest to avoid complexity and use configuration as a service. So what, you know, I don't know if you can follow me right now, but maybe it looks almost a little bit too simple on the slide. It's like the idea here is we have a developer, he uses the configuration as a service system and configures its systems and it's done. Some of you may ask, no, that sounds too simple. At least I would. So coming back to X as a service, like this is a definition of mine. You may not agree with it, so it's okay. For me, in this case, when I'm talking about configuration as a service, it is important that you can have somebody else to apply it or to do it for you, but you don't need to wait for a specific person. If we are involving humans, it's likely going to be too slow. And another point is very important, it needs to be like a self-service. You can go to Amazon, to Rackspace, or wherever, and say, I want new Visual VM, right now. And there's no one, like, I think there's no one at Amazon looking at your request, going to a tool and clicking your new VM. So this is really important. So how does it work? If a developer actually goes to the CDIS website, to the web service, he first of all needs to grant access to his systems to the utility. So what happens there is, I'm a little bit sorry, I cannot show you too much of too many screenshots at the moment because it's still like a lot in beta phase. So things will change a lot, and the screenshots we have are actually from internal customers. So a little bit sorry about this, but it's, yeah, I will come back to this later. So what the developer actually does, he goes to the website and says, I would like to add these hosts and I would like to be able to configure them. And what he gets a link or like a very like a command line extract, what he executes on his servers. And after that, the tool has access to his servers. It's essentially like, if you're talking tech terms, it's just a curl script which actually pulls down some code with SSH pub keys inside. That's about it. He then goes to the CDIS website and selects various configurations to apply to his systems. And then in the end, you know, this is an old version here, says, I would like to have my systems configured for these and these services right now. So what is possible at the moment, and we're using an internal beta, is that various people who are not sysadmins but developers, and we're talking mostly here about like Ruby on Rails or Java developers, which are like in our first beta, they are right now using virtual machines from Swiss cloud providers, which are pretty naked, either CentOS or Debian or Ubuntu machines. And they're using CDIS as a service to like get up their Ruby and Rails stack running, or their Java stack. And yeah, that's about the service itself. I think, I'm going to a little bit into technical details here, because I think you may be interested in it. The website itself is also implemented in Ruby on Rails. I don't know how many people of you first of all, know Ruby on Rails. Okay, not that many. Okay, so I'll make little sidestep here. Ruby on Rails is like an application framework for the programming language Ruby. It is quite popular in Switzerland. It's like the de facto standard platform you use right now if you create a new web application. Java is really not there anymore. It's still for like big enterprises, but like for everyone with less than 50 employees, you're likely going to use Ruby on Rails in Switzerland. I know there's also like Django and other frameworks available, but this is what's really in right now. So this is also the reason why we actually chose Ruby on Rails as the front end part for the configuration as a service page. And the back end is actually based on CDIS. And what you can right now choose when you are, right, for the people in the beta, there is quite a huge set of configurations actually already available, a lot of them actually coming with CDIS. We offer like currently for free like Ruby on Rails hosting, and people are using it like mostly for web server and database server configurations. Actually missed to put like the MongoDB logo there, because MongoDB is also very hip at the moment. And yeah, I named CDIS already quite a lot of times here in this talk. How many people actually have heard about CDIS before? Okay. And all right, so it's not so many. This is actually my phone. Give me a second. I'm sorry for that. Like everyone else probably has done already. Sorry for that. So, as I've seen, not so many people of you actually know about CDIS, so I wanted to give you a quick introduction to it. CDIS is what we call a next-generation configuration management system. It's next-generation because it is kind of after the wave of major configuration management systems. And what we think, actually, we learned like from the mistakes others have already made. And you know, I'm trying to not bash other configuration management systems here. But I think compared to others, I won't name them, it's a little bit more flexible. It is way more efficient and way more fun to use. Why is it so? I'll just explain in a few seconds. Next generation VR Reddits. There are some parts that are different from what you know. If you're working with configuration management systems, you may have had the fact that, you know, you're looking there, you're committing code, you're pushing it somewhere, you're trying to apply your configuration, and no, it doesn't work again. You know, you may have had this feeling already. So one of the first design principles with CDIS was it must be very easy to use. And it must be very easy to use for sysadmins mainly. So it's not so much made with the developers in background, but more with sysadmins. I'm from, like I told you before, I was working like for a university in Zurich, but I was also working like for a Swiss phone book. And for them, it was very, very important to be able to change the existing infrastructure at a certain point of time. So it was very important to have like push-based support. We could say like, this cluster will now change like to a different configuration. And we're not going like to have those machines pull the changes constantly, but more like, all right, this is the time for release. It's not Friday evening. It is some other time. And we will apply the changes. In CDIS, a lot of existing technologies were actually reused. I will show you in the next slides. And also some promise we do is there, CDIS will always stay completely open source. There will be no commercial version whatsoever. The idea behind that is what I've seen with other products, not only just related to configuration management system. There was a lot of tools which chose a way to say we have now a commercial version that differs from our open source product in whatever ways. You will always notice that the company actually pushes a lot of forward into this commercial product, which is okay because they're actually making the living out of it. But the problem is that the previously like open source product is getting in a kind of worse shape compared to the commercial product. And what you have is, you have a lot of enthusiastic users who are actually on the open source line and are trying to fix things which already have been fixed in the commercial version. So I think it's a lot of work like being redone there. What we actually do is like we offer like development support for CDIS, so anyone can come and say, hey, there's some cool feature missing in CDIS, we would like to have it, can you do it? This is what we do, but we will always like push it back to the open source version. Actually, furthermore, I don't know how it's here really in the US, but we're pushing actively all of our customers to release their configurations so that like when there's one customer of ours who says, well, we are going to have this huge Hadoop cluster, and they would like us to like implement it in CDIS, we will do this for them, but we will ask them afterwards, can we actually publish those things to the public? And so far, like I would say like about 90% of our customers are fine with that. So what we usually do is like we add a notice like this type was developed for company XYZ and it's publicly available on a GPL v3. There's something else which may be interesting for you if you are using configuration management systems. CDIS has upcoming installation support, so for provisioning, you can like start up your computer and without ever touching like Kickstarter, pre-seed, you know, I don't actually know what's called for Zuse. Anyone knows? I don't know. Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. So the problem you have with those tools is, again, you have to relearn how to provision your system for a variety of Linux or even Unix systems. If you're more like working in a bank, you'll probably also have to deal with IX or, so there is like experimental support in the 4.x branch already, which we are using at two customers so far. So they have their systems like booted via PXE and getting them installed via CDIST. this is like to be merged within this year. Yeah. Right. So why did we actually, besides, we were always developing this tool, there are some other good reasons why we're using like CDIS as a backend for the service. And one of them is we actually just need an open SSH port on our target systems. And in the core of CDIS, there's a functionality to easily be able to branch out, like on the operating system. So imagine there's this the CDIS configuration service is there, and you are saying, ah, I want to have like a Ruby on Rails stack on my virtual machine. Your virtual machine may be CentOS, SUSE, SLES, like compared to OpenSUSE. It may be a Debian, it may be Debian Woody, it may be Debian Lenny, whatever. So you need to be able to actually support the variety of operating systems. And this is really built into CDIS, which is pretty handy when you want to offer a service like this. And actually, the development of CDIS started in, I think we'll come back to this history later, but at ETH Zurich, and so it's kind of proven that it worked. And yeah, I told you before, like configuration management, for me, it includes being scalable. CDIS is by design scalable, so as soon as you run into bottleneck and you say, right now I can configure like 100 machines in parallel, and now it's going to be just low, you just add another machine, and it will scale linearly. Well, my tongue, I'm sorry. It will scale with the number, of course. So, and this is actually like verified and benchmarked. There are some logs actually for this if you're really, really curious. So this works by design. And you can distribute it to as many machines as you want to. Yeah, so CDIS history. So for anyone who does not yet know so much about CDIS, it kind of started at LISA like about 4 years ago, where I was visiting, and at this point of time, we were using a different configuration management tool, which I also won't name, but it was not the one of the previous speaker, and it's another one that's pretty big. So we were using this tool, and we had heavy issues with bugs in the system, which were not going to be fixed, and we had the problem that the developers of this tool did not really understand what the source of the problems was. So we were like opening a lot of issues in the bug tracker, which were sequentially like closed and rejected, and it was like, okay, so maybe you didn't understand the problem. So this was the reason why at some point we were like, okay, maybe it's not that hard actually to write a configuration management system. What do we actually need to do? Maybe we need to manage some packages, users, files, processes, some servers. It doesn't sound too bad. It's like six things on my hand. What else do we need to do? Yeah, we need to have it like idempotent, we need to have reproducible. Oh, and we need a really, really cool DSL. I'll come back to this later. So the first version of CDIS was actually released in 2011. It was completely implemented in shell script at this time, and it was completely usable with the feature, with six features I told you about right now. The problem was it was scalable, but it was dead slow. Imagine from the way the Linux kernel works and how shell scripting actually works. We had like every function was like cleanly separated into its own shell script. So for one run, like one configuration run, we had about like 3.7k forks that were going on for one machine. So it was interesting to see whenever we had this like a CDIS run, it was like, yes, 80% of the time is actually spent in kernel like for forking and coming back, forking and coming back. Yeah, we tried to rewrite it using shell functions. Unfortunately, OpenGroup and POSIX removed the local keyword. You may know the local keyword in shell. It is still there, but it's not officially there anymore. It was kicked out, I think, in issue 6. So in case you're using it, yeah, I don't know how how long it's still there. So in 2012, which is not on the slide, I actually got more and more requests from France. People were actually asking me, like, oh, it's a great utility, but who's actually offering commercial support for it? And I was like, it's open source. You can do it yourself. And they were like, yeah, but you know, we need someone to pay money to. And I was like, yes, I can be the one you pay me money, but... And, you know, you may have had this problem as well, like when you're in a bigger company and you're trying to like invent some new open source utility, and people are then coming and say, but there is solution Y, which is half as cool, twice as expensive, now N times as expensive, it's commercially available and it's backed up by a company. We're going to use this one instead of the pretty lean, cool open source variant. And at this time I was like, okay, maybe you can give me the money and we can, you know, we can just make a deal. And that was the reason why we actually founded the Ungleich GmbH in 2013 to be able, I'm really not joking here, there were some companies in France which were only allowed like to use tools which are supported commercially. So that's how we actually started. Meanwhile, we are actually still the ones who are having the fingers mostly on the core of CDIS, like whenever like big features like installation support or like performance issues are taken a look at, it's mostly our company. But a lot of code are like actually new types, like for Postgres management, for FreeBSD, for OpenBSD, it's actually coming from the community. And so it's kind of good, well-running open source project already. I hid this a little bit, the information before. I told you we needed some very, very cool DSL. And you may know that you can either like use the class concept you have with CFEngine or Ruby-like syntax with Puppet or even Ruby syntax with Puppet. And I told you in the beginning, CDIS was more aimed at sysadmins. So what we chose was just very naturally, you will create your configuration in shell script. In the beginning it was like, what do we do without arrays? What do we do? But it's actually, a lot of things are actually pretty easy as soon as you know some basic concepts of shell, because arrays you can replace with loops. Loops you have a lot in shell. You can do pretty cool things with awk, with SED, with LS, depending on which server you are actually running on. You don't have to re-implement it in the programming language of your choice, because it's already there. CDIS is push-based usually. It uses SSH for it. And so to say, it does not have any requirement on the target host besides having an SSH server installed. This is actually why someone from the community came up with the definition that CDIS is actually a zero dependency configuration management system. Yeah, I told you it's open source. We promise it will always stay open source. If not, I can give you my address. You can come to me and talk to me. It will always be. It's like a really philosophical thing here. I don't want to go too deep into details. I just wanted, because I know you are not so much familiar with CDIS, wanted to give you a rough overview of how it is organized. In CDIS, you have an initial manifest where you define which types belong to which hosts. You have explorers which go onto the remote host and say kind of what operating system is there, like what kind of global information are there. And the heart of CDIS are actually types. And the interesting thing here is, in CDIS there's just one thing actually to manage configurations in. There are not multiple like levels of hierarchies to say, all right, when I do this, I will do this, and then I put this hierarchy into this one. It's, in CDIS there are just types. And the type, again, has a manifest, which can reuse other types. Type has explorers to explore like status, like for a file. The file type has explorers on its own. A type has parameters, so it's well defined what a type can actually do. For instance, a file type has an owner attribute and things like this. And a type has so-called gencode scripts. Those allow you to generate code which will either be executed locally on the system you are configuring from or remotely on the system you're configuring. Right. So far, to see this. All right, good in time. Let me give you a short summary. With the Seed service, we're currently actually really enabling users. It's really cool to see like developers are like pumping up like VMs and are actually running their stacks there, which they can do now alone without any sysadmin. Right, so they don't need to care and think about any configuration management system. They can just go to the website, say, I want to have this feature on my system. I want to have a mail server with a smart host that goes there. They usually don't even care like if you're using like SendMail, PostFix, Exim. It doesn't really matter to developers. It's more about providing functionality in configurations. And in practice, it also reduces a lot of the complexity you have in systems, because the users, you know, they can do stuff on their own. They, you know, they don't need to have any knowledge about systems anymore. And for us, it's really interesting. This platform is actually helping us a lot to combine things from different customers. As I told you before, we always ask our customers to make stuff open source. And right now what we also do with this project is whenever a customer comes, we ask them if they also wanted to like beta test this new platform. And their configurations are then made publicly available within the platform. So anyone who actually requests a configuration from us, everyone else will also like benefit from it. So it's really a win-win-win situation there, which is really cool in my opinion. So outcomes so far, users are actually able to do this stuff on their own. We reduce the complexity in many situations already. And I think it's also important to know that developers can actually focus on their core competences. They can stay within a Ruby or PHP or Java world. They don't need to relearn like a new DSL or NDSL at all. And for us, it's also really great to see like there's a really growing number of configurations coming up. It started really with some basic stuff from web servers, and now it's really whole application servers. Right, so in case you now have the feeling, wow, I will also like to try Seedist as a service, which we try to distinguish it like Seedist as a configuration management tool and Seedist as a service is with a dot in between. This is actually the domain name of the website. It's not yet publicly live. You can go to it. It's just a 1990 under construction page. Yeah, the beta is running like starting early this June. So it's really, we're still like kind of this bug is there, and this bug is there, and we kind of want to like make the public beta. It's actually a public release. It should be like public beta there for August this year. So if you're interested, you can just drop us a mail at cdi.st@ungleich.ch. And that's it from my side. Thanks a lot for listening, and yeah, if you're interested in news, you can follow us on Twitter or drop us a mail. And yeah, if you have any questions, I think I would be open right now.
So this sounds, this looks very interesting. How about security? So now you have this magical SSH keys that have access to tons of systems. Let's assume this becomes widely popular. So both from the technical point of view and legal liability point of view, how do you handle this?
I didn't hire him, but it's a really good question. I have had this like the last two or three talks I had about CDIS. Actually, people like you were asking really great questions. I'm very thankful for that. Security is actually like one of our major concerns here, and I'm not a buzzword bingo guy, so I will just give you the plain technical thing. What we do is like for every user who registers at our page, we generate a new pair of public and private keys, so it's unique to one customer, and only those keys which are actually stored on a separate system, like the private keys stored on a separate system, will have access to your own systems. So in case our front-end server at some point may get compromised, which we don't hope, your private key is stored on a different server which is not accessible via shell directly from the front-end server. And it also means that whenever like someone is actually cool enough to actually hack our front end and is able or guesses like a password from another customer, he will be able to like, you know, there's no chance of really being able like to configure systems of another person. This is like for the technical part. And what we also do is with this initial script that you execute on your server, you are granting like root access via public key only. So there's no chance of like getting in via password into your server afterwards. Legally seen, I don't know actually which part you are referring to, but so far what we try to ensure is to like to do our best like to separate and to like the private stuff really away from everything that is public and everything that is actually publicly facing.
Yeah, I was referring, for example, this French company.
Right.
You're a French customer.
Yep.
Someone breaks into your server via Ruby on Rails vulnerability, which are not unheard of.
Yep.
and breaks into their systems and trashes them. They sue you.
You mean on their systems?
Yeah.
That's no problem. No. Actually, this is this is in the terms of service. It's like what we actually provide is just the configuration. You can actually, and we do actually offer this, we do offer like maintenance for your service as well. But this is really like a separate topic. We do have it in the terms of service that we will do the configuration, we do it initially for you, but we won't upgrade your systems. So,
which sort of leads on into a related question. Mm-hmm. How do you prevent your centrally managed service from breaking someone's system? I mean, you have your modules or whatever they are, but the user's system is configured in some weird way and your shell script does something unexpected and breaks things. How do you handle that?
Whatever is on your system, it's not supposed to be there. I'm pretty serious with this. Whenever you put configuration management system in place, you can't be sure about like any manual change that has been made there. And it's also in terms of service, like you know, as soon as you grant us access to the system and you press the configure button, you know, you may have had an Apache installed, it may not be there anymore. What we deliver is the configuration as specified. And whatever has been there, you know. But it's a good question, yeah. Thanks a lot.
So one of the side effects of whatever as a service tends to be a reduction in flexibility. So for instance, if I run an instance in EC2, I can't arbitrarily size that instance. I have a growing and large set of instance sizes that I can pick from it, and one of those is going to suit my needs, presumably, but I can't just arbitrarily choose something in between a small and a medium, for instance. I have to pick one of those two options. And ultimately, this is probably a good thing, but it's also scary if you're used to arbitrary flexibility. Mm-hmm. So how are you sort of selling that to your customers who may be used to all the power in the world and are now sort of limited to you know, particularly from a developer's point of view, they now have to pick from here's how someone else thinks that Apache should be configured. How do you sell that?
There are actually three solutions to that problem. The first one we have is whenever a customer thinks he's too locked in with one of our configurations, they can ask us and we will just extend them. So this is number one, which actually is the most common case at the moment. Mm-hmm. Number two is we do provide actually types which allow to include like custom code. For instance, like, very typical setup we actually offer is Ruby on Rails based on Nginx plus Unicorn plus PostgreSQL, which is our like standard Ruby on Rails hosting in Switzerland. In this type, like you have sometimes applications that are really, really slow responding on some requests. And what we offer them like custom code to be injected into their own web server configuration. So in case they are actually aware that there needs to be a maximum time of 240 seconds instead of the default, they actually can put it in there. And the third way is actually in CDIS in general, when we write types, we sometimes omit to change some files by intent. That means like we can also take the Nginx example again. Whenever like we install Nginx on OpenSUSE, CentOS, or Debian, we just install the default Nginx package and we adapt to the way the distribution actually thinks things are made the correct way. So we actually place the files in the right places. And when you think, maybe at some other point I should modify the main Nginx configuration file, we won't change it. This is like kind of, you know, common sense approach to configuration management.
I just wanted to follow up real quick on the SSH question.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of been a matter of some contention in CM. So can you kind of go into a bit as to why you chose that as a transport method?
Oh, yeah, sure. Because it's, I think, the safest thing that you can find, first of all, plus it is available on any Unix server by default. This is like when you have other configuration management systems, you always have to bootstrap them first into your system, whereas with SSH it's just now given already. And it has pretty cool features that I think most people are actually not aware of, like you can compress things, you can reuse connections, and there's a lot of things, so SSH is a really, really nice utility to use, in our opinion.
Oh, great, I was just curious.
Yeah, sure. All right. So thanks again.